Welcome to Sewindipity on naturechannel.fm. Join Shelley Levis, where she will explore gardening trends, homesteading techniques, and useful tips that will help your garden grow. Shelley will share the latest gardening gadgets on the market today, discuss eco-friendly gardening methods, and fun do-it-yourself projects that will have you thinking outside the pot. Special guests will reveal their gardening secrets and advice on how you can create a garden just about anywhere, whether it be a small urban balcony or a large open backyard. Gardening should be easy and gardening should be fun. Prepare to be inspired to get growing with Shelley Levis on Sewindipity here at naturechannel.fm.
Good afternoon, all you plant geeks, eco warriors, and gardenpreneurs out there. You're listening to Sewindipity on naturechannel.fm, and I am your host, Shelley Levis, talking to you live from the Fraser Valley in beautiful British Columbia, Canada. How's everybody doing? I wasn't here last week. I was very busy. I was asked to be a judge at the Cam West Show, which is a really big deal here in BC and Western Canada, for all of the local plant producers and products and nurseries, and just anybody that's in this industry. And they actually moved to a new location this year. They used to be downtown Vancouver, and they actually moved out to the Abbotsford Tradex. And I have to tell you, I love the new venue. All the vendors seem to be really pleased. They had an excellent turnout, and I think that the new location is actually going to be a hit for many, many years to come. So a big shout out to all those who worked really hard to put this year's show on. Congratulations. It was fantastic, and I absolutely, absolutely had a great time. And I was absolutely honored to be a judge. I was asked to be a booth judge, actually, so I got to go around and take a look at all the different displays that people put together, and then working with another judge, we came up with a list of ribbon-worthy booths to hand out to at the end of the day one on Wednesday night. And I mean, the theme was barbecue, backyard barbecue, and I have to tell you, some people really did a great job. They had some great themes, and they brought some things together, and it's just a lot of fun to be able to go to shows like that where people really get into it. So big shout out to those guys that really worked hard on their booths. You deserved the ribbons you were awarded, absolutely. Yeah, so that was what I did last week, but in the meantime, I am actually, like, I work at Arts Nursery here in Langley, BC, or actually Surrey. It's on the Surrey-Langley border, and we are preparing for a massive scarecrow festival coming this Saturday. And now, it's a little bit different in the sense that it's not quite like the fall fairs that you usually go to. We're actually got these scarecrows that we've been putting together by sponsors to raise money for the Versatiles Senior Citizens Acting Group, which is a group of senior citizens that go around to palliative care homes and senior citizens homes, and it's seniors entertaining seniors, and we just love what they do, so we're really happy to be sponsoring them this year. And we've had so many brands and different individuals come forward and local businesses that got behind this cause and are either building scarecrows or they are getting us to build them for them. And of course, my background is I'm a decorator and a designer, and I do all sorts of crazy things. And if you've been to my website, you'll see that I love projects and I love a challenge and I love theming. So I was given the task of building the scarecrows, and I've done about 32 so far, and I still got a few more to go. Our goal was to hit at least 50 over-the-top scarecrows, and I will be sharing these on my blog, and you can go to Arts Nursery on Facebook as well to see all of the updates and the action as we start to, you know, reveal these crazy scarecrows. And they're not your typical scarecrows, guys. I'm not talking about your straw hat and, you know, plaid flannel shirt. I actually made one that looks exactly like the Hulk. I even dyed his burlap green so that we could create the green skin of the Hulk. I have a hockey player. I have Gaia green, which is the Earth Mother. Oh boy, do I have Superman. I have Superman as a scarecrow. I'm not lying. It's totally over the top. And some of them, you know, as I'm making my cast of characters and I keep piling them off to the side, I've got like 50 scarecrows all staring at me while I make the next one. And I mean, they may not have brains, but they have a ton of personality, and it's actually been a real ton of fun. So if you are local and listening to this, make sure that you come out to see us here in Surrey, BC on 192 at Arts Nursery for the actual reveal and on Saturday morning. We have all sorts of guest speakers are going to be there. Brian Minter, which is in Canada, really. I mean, I know a lot of British Columbians know him, but in Canada as well as internationally, he's well known for the Minter Gardens that he had for many, many years, and he still has a gardening nursery now, and he's going to be one of our guest speakers, and it is a privilege and an honor to have Brian there. Now, he's on at 4 o'clock. I am on at 2, so I'll be doing a speaking event as well at the event, and I will be discussing fall decor and gourds and pumpkins and all of that jazz. It's going to be an absolutely fun day. So I hope that you guys have been enjoying your fall so far. I don't know where you guys are all listening from around the world. I mean, it's going to be different temperatures and zones for you guys. We've actually been very dry, but it has definitely gotten cooler. Our nights are cooling off, and you can really see the leaves are starting to drop. And we're starting to get the signs of time to do the fall chores. Now, I haven't been doing all my fall chores. I was hoping to get to it this week, but, you know, scarecrows are a little bit of a priority right now. But next week, I will begin doing what I need to do of going through my checklist of fall tasks, as well as getting ready for the winter months. Now, we don't really get really, really, really cold here until, you know, it's kind of strange. It used to be in December, but now it's actually even gone a little bit later where we kind of get most of our cold snaps in January and even as late as February. But there's a lot of preparation that needs to be done, and a lot of people are looking at their gardens, and I just wanted to do a little bit of a fall task checklist today about shutting your garden down for winter and, you know, all the things that you should be aware of, from planting bulbs, pruning, raking leaves, harvesting your fruits and vegetables for the year, and composting and putting away what plants you need to for winter. Now, there's a lot of stuff to cover in this one, so I'm going to actually just kind of start right now. Let's just start with planting your bulbs. Now, in our zone, which is zone 7, we can get away with planting our bulbs quite late in the season. And I think that a lot of times people will start planting their bulbs really early in September. Now, it depends on your weather. If you guys get cold quickly in October, then go ahead and start planting them. But we don't really get that cold. We don't get to a first frost until probably, sometimes not even until, you know, the end of November. If you're having a mild and warm fall, don't plant your bulbs too early. What ends up happening is you stick those bulbs in the ground and it's still warm. And what triggers a bulb to actually grow is warm soil. So you might actually have a problem where he starts to he feels the soil. It's been planted too early. It's still warm. The temperatures are haven't dipped enough for it to kind of stay in a hibernation mode. It becomes active, starts putting on roots, and then it starts putting out shoots. And you don't want that to happen before the cold frosts come along, because it's going to zap that bulb and it's going to stunt its growth for in the spring. So if you've ever had that happen where you went and planted all these bulbs and it was a super warm season in the fall, and then all of a sudden spring comes along and you're wondering where's all your flowers? It's a good possibility that you actually planted them maybe too early. It is better to wait a little bit longer. So, I mean, myself, I know that I've planted bulbs as late as the first week of December here in my zone in the Pacific Northwest, because we do have such a mild fall. So keep that in mind when you're planting your bulbs. And the other thing to keep in mind is the depth of your bulbs. And this is very important and really a good rule of thumb, because people are, well, how deep should I plant, you know, this bulb or that bulb or this tulip or that daffodil? The rule of thumb really is 2.5 times in the plant it 2.5 times deep as it is round. So if you've got a, say, a 4-inch bulb that's around, or a 3-inch bulb, for instance, you're going to want to go down at least 8 inches. Does that make sense? That's usually with your daffodils. Those are the big bulbs. You got to get down to be at least 6 to 8 inches. Now, that can be tough. That can be tough because some people's ground just doesn't, it's not, you know, very pliable, and it's hard to get it down. So we're going to talk about how you can use a bit of a mulch on top of it to kind of make it a little bit deeper. But the point is try to get it down as deep as you can, for especially the big bulbs, because they need that extra protection and they need to get down there. Now, a great way to, if you can't get it that deep, which is quite often you can't, putting a layer of bulk mulch, bark mulch on top, a couple inches, is kind of like an insurance program. You know that you've only gotten down maybe 4 inches, but if you put a couple of inches of mulch on top, you're cheating, but you're at least giving it a little bit more cover. And we've done that a lot here in certain areas because we know we just can't get down because of, it's just too tough for the soil to get through. And especially if you're planting a lot of bulbs, and this is can get very exhausting. I've done installations where I've done well over 3,000 bulbs at one time. And that sounds like a lot, but it adds up quickly, like you're doing small little areas. And when it comes to with your bulb planting, keep in mind that don't just soldier course them, like do a straight row of one bulb after another all the way down one side, or just putting one here and then maybe one back at that bed and then one a little bit over. Don't space them out. They don't have any impact like that. The best way to do it is in threes, fives, and sevens. And grouping your bulbs together it creates a bigger impact. So do a wider row on a triangular basis. So kind of do one, create little triangles, draw a triangle if it makes it easy for you at the 6-inch apart depth or whatever is on the guide. And then place your bulbs in those little spots and all the way down, and then go back over it from the beginning of the row or the area that you plan on planting them in if you're doing in a block, and then just sink them all at the same time with your trowel. So that's what I would recommend is the way to do it. Now, with bark mulch, if you have an area, like I have a whole area that's a perennial bed, and once my perennials have completely, died back and I've got my bulbs in, I actually do a two mulch layer. I do a dark mulch, like a red fir mulch, and then I'll use the white shavings from like a lumber mill of just pure lumber or pine and whatever, the blonde shavings, and I'll create a design. And a lot of times this design is quite pretty. I can do all sorts of different shapes, or I could do big hearts or flowers, whatever I want. But it is a beautiful design that you can put on top, and it's a bark mulch area, and it looks very decorative all winter long. Now, I've shared this on my post, so if you want to see a bark mulch design done, go to my website at www.serendipity.com, and just in the search bar at the top there to the right, just put in bark mulch and it will pop right up, and you will see how I've done this design, which is it's quite an amazing effect even in the winter times when you take a look at it. Now, I've had people say, well, that's not going to last. Well, to be honest with you, if it's quite a windy day when you're trying to do it, if you're doing a light misting with a hose, turn your nozzle to like a mist just to help keep it down. But it really only needs to go through a couple of nights of frost and it sets. And it literally will stay. Like I've had winds and all sorts of things come along. It has not destroyed the design. The design was completely intact the entire winter. Now it'll fade a little bit, but it still looks great all the way up until the first few crocuses start to push through, because it's really what comes from underneath that'll crack that surface. But other than that, the design has always stayed and looked amazing. Now, last little point before we go to the break here. If you have problems with deer and rabbits getting at your bulbs, you should be planting deer-resistant or rabbit-resistant bulbs, and this will ensure that they kind of leave them alone. Nothing is 100% resistant, because sometimes they'll plug their nose and eat it anyways. But for the most part, getting the resistant varieties rather than ones that they consider delicacies is probably in your best activities for planting bulbs, so that all that work doesn't go to waste. And things like daffodils, Siberian squills, and fritillaria are great examples of that. And most of the packaging that you'll see nowadays, they actually do have it right on there that they are deer or rabbit resistant. So we're going to come back. We could talk a little bit more about some other fall tasks. And I'm happy to be back after 2 weeks. Happy that you guys are joining me along. And let's take a quick break. Be right back.
You are listening to Serendipity with Shelley Levis on NaturesChannel.fm, airing live every Wednesday at 7 p.m. Eastern Time. Find archives and more at Serendipity.com.
Organic, loose leaf, and simply delectable. Prasanna Tea Company strives to help people find balance, connect, and live in wellness. We source the finest tea leaves from pristine farms around the world and blend them with some of nature's purest gifts. creating unique infusions that are healthfully life-enhancing, blissfully aromatic, and positively delicious. Find us at PrasannaTea.com. Prasanna Tea. It's tea the way it should be. Start your week off in a beautiful way. Come to Nature Sanctuary Sunday Service for a powerful and beautiful eco-spiritual celebration where we honor and support ourselves through the reflection of nature. Join us every Sunday at 9 a.m. Eastern Time here at natureschannel.fm. Visit thechurchofnature.org to find out more about Nature Sanctuary Sunday Service and the Church of Nature.
Pets share our day-to-day struggles, adventures, and special moments, and they love us unconditionally. For all these reasons and so many more, host Peggy Hoyt shares her extensive knowledge in estate planning to help you ensure a healthy and safe future for your pet. Tune in to All My Children Wear Fur Coats every Monday at 3 p.m. Eastern Time on natureschannel.fm.
You are listening to natureschannel.fm, live talk radio that helps connect you more deeply with nature. Natureschannel.fm, it's where we grow. Join the Horses, Heart, and Soul Herd and Sarah Willerson on natureschannel.fm Wednesdays at 1 p.m. Eastern for horse wisdom straight from the stall. Horses are the heartbeat of the earth, and they help us attune our own hearts with our souls. They encourage us to remember that we are part of the harmonious flow that is nature. Tune in every Wednesday for horse wisdom shared straight from the stalls.
Nature's Channel is where you grow with amazing talk radio shows. We talk about animals and gardening, natural health and wellness. Listen live at Find Archives at natureschannel.fm.
You are listening to Serendipity with Shelley Levis on natureschannel.fm, airing live every Wednesday at 7 p.m. Eastern Time. Find archives and more at serendipity.com.
Welcome back, everybody. You're listening to Serendipity. I'm your host, Shelley Levis, here on natureschannel.fm, and we are talking about fall tasks. Now, we were just chatting with bulbs and planting them and having, really try to get fun with your patterns. And, you know, the best way to really do that is just to draw out your garden and the areas that you have available to plant, and then just kind of create a pattern that you really would like to do, and then figure out the heights. Obviously, you want to have your tallest growing bulbs at the back of the bed, and then moving forward from medium to small, like the crocus at the front. So have fun with that and do different combinations. Now, there are different types of tulips and daffodils that come back year after year, and they're called naturalizers. There's different labels for them, but I'm noticing this year that they're getting very specific by calling them landscape bulbs. And this is the type of ones that landscapers are using and putting into garden designs and stuff like that, because they do naturalize and they come back. But there's a little bit, I won't get right into all that, but do a bit of a Google search on there to find out which your best naturalizers are. Now, if you want something super fancy, there's a chance that it will come back, but it usually peters out after a couple of years. Any of the really hybrids, they just don't seem to retain the same flowers. And sometimes they come back even a little bit different color than the original ones that you even had. So, some of the fancies are nice to have, but don't have your heart set on the fact that they're going to come back every single year. Use them as the fillers to the ones that are the naturalizers. So just keeping that in mind. Now, speaking of bulbs, there's your edible bulbs. There's planting garlic. Garlic is a great time to plant in the fall, and it overwinters very well. And this is about the time you're also going to be harvesting your garlic, which we'll get into a little bit later on. So time to plant garlic. Now, you're going to buy them in cloves, or sometimes you can get a bag of them in cloves, but other times you can buy like the big giant red Russian garlic. It will come in a full bulb, and that you break up and you plant the individual cloves, not the whole bulb. And each clove is going to turn its, when it's time to dig them up, they will turn themselves into a full bulb. So that's how that works with garlic. As far as your lawn goes, it is time to feed your lawn at this time of year. It's time to get it fertilized and then I would actually start lowering the lawnmower, because at this time of year, the grass isn't growing as quickly as it does in the spring. So you don't need to have it set as high. You can start lowering it a little bit more. And I should have pointed this out before, as far as bulbs goes, any of your summer bulbs that are finished out, those summer flowering, like dahlias is a good example, those will need to be lifted if you are in a colder zone. Dahlias don't overwinter here in my area, in a zone 7. They don't. It depends, I guess. If you have an area that's right against your house that's protected with an overhang and it gets the heat from the house, that it's possible that they can come back. I've had cannas actually come back really well in a situation like that, but any of my bulbs that are more moved away from the house and not protected that were sent, summer bulbs, they don't overwinter well. And in our area, it's not so much the cold, it's the wet. The wet just rots them out completely. And what I've done in the past is I've pulled those bulbs and I just, gently brush off the soil. I don't wash them. I don't remove all the soil. I just kind of remove maybe any of the clods that are stuck to the roots. And, I've cut back within about 2 to 3 inches left of the stalk on the bulb. And then I put them into crates with, that hamster shavings that you can get? It's kind of like the cedar shavings. I've used that. And, you've got to keep an eyeball on the bulbs, because the cedar shavings do two things. It deters pests and it keeps the bulbs dry, but because it's such a dry material, it can sometimes whisk away moisture out of the bulbs. So you kind of have to find a bit of a happy medium. And the way I've done that is simply to check my bulbs, at least once a month throughout the winter, and just remove any ones that are starting to rot. Maybe give a light mist with a spray bottle of water just to the bulbs and the shavings around the bulbs, and then cover back up and put it back into a cool storage with no light and frost-free. So that's how you would store and winter your summer bulbs. Now, this is a great time of the year to start dividing and cutting your perennials. Now, this is something that should be done every 3 years. Really, really it should. And if you don't do it every 3 years, sometimes it kind of get really out of hand. Like my irises, I had, I really hadn't done them for about 4 years, and they were really out of hand, and the clump was very hard to penetrate. Now, there's different ways. People will take two pronged garden forks and put them back to back and shove them into the centers or wherever it is that you want to divide, put them back to back, and then you just kind of use the handles and you pry out your perennial, or especially things like iris bulbs, for example, or hostas. Now, doing that, it's the best practice because it gently pries them apart. And myself, I'm going to be honest, there's been times where I just simply haven't had the time to be that gentle, and I've just used a good sharp spade and just chopped right through a nice clean cut, and then picked up the clump and moved it from there. So this is a time to be doing that. The only perennials that you will not be dividing at this time of year are any of your fall flowering ones, like asters and mums. Though they are not to be divided at this time of year, they're in their show. This is their time of year to shine. So you would want to divide those in spring when they aren't active and they're concentrating on their root growth. So that's the time to do that as well. But in addition to doing all your dividing of your perennials and replanting them, this is planting time. This really is the best time to plant shrubs and evergreens and trees at this time of year. And the reason why is because there's all this energy that's going into their root system. They're putting all of their energy, they're shut down instead of pushing up and shooting out, going up, up and shoot with leaf growth and fruit growth. They are now stopped doing that. Now all the energy is coming back into the tree. The leaves have done their job. They've, turned sunlight into energy and provide the plant with tons of sugar for the new growth. And now all of that energy is going back down into the roots, into the ground, which makes it this time of year really the best time to plant. Ideally, as any landscaper knows. Now, unfortunately, people want their jobs done in spring, and we do that in spring. But then, of course, what falls right after spring is summer. And summer can be a really hard, dry one, especially if you're dealing with any water restrictions in your area. So, if you can hold off and are able to, if you've got a garden renovation coming up in your next year here, planting in fall is the best time for any of the trees and shrubs because they have the best chance to survive. Now, of course, this time of year, we're talking about, you know, planting. So now all of your summer flowers are probably finishing out. You've got all sorts of, you know, petunias that are looking really haggard. My garden right now, don't even get me started. Here I am telling you guys what you should do in my garden. Looks so bad right now because I've been so busy, but I do plan on doing it this week, and I have a lot of annuals that are just way beyond spent. They need to be ripped out, and it's time to start putting in my fall annuals. And of course, there's the cabbages, the kales, and there's lots of beautiful colors. There's pinks and the purples that are really celebrated in fall, and we don't really think of fall as being in the cool colors, but they really are. There's a lot of beautiful colors, like the purple pansies, for instance, or the asters and mums that come in the plums, or the deep garnets. And all those are really beautiful color combinations when you put them with the nice icy blues of the cabbages. So you can really have a gorgeous, cool blue and purple pink kind of theme in the fall, because that's just every much a bit of fall as any of the warm colors are. So when you are out there looking for your annuals, of course, our star of the season will be fall mums and beautiful, gorgeous fall mums. And a big shout out to Milner Village Garden Center. They supplied me with my mums this year for doing a bunch of the photographs for some of my editorial articles that I had to get out. So I really appreciate it. And I actually did work there for as a retail manager for them for some time. And I learned a lot about mums while I was there. When you grow 200,000 mums in a facility, you start to learn a little bit about them. And they were quite fascinating. And I think I've already talked about this topic a couple of weeks ago when I was talking about fall decor. So if you want to go back and listen to that a little bit more of the real fun science behind mums, or you can visit my website and look for fall mums at www.serendipity.com, and you will see that I have all the care and how to select them. But just to recap, when you're shopping for your mums, look for ones that are about 80% closed buds. That's what you're looking for, is mostly closed. Just a few open, just so that you get an identification of what color and what color you're actually buying and taking home. But you don't want something that's in full bloom. I mean, as much as you might have all the color that you want there, they're not going to last very long. You've got maybe about 2 weeks worth of show, whereas if you were to buy one that's mostly closed, you can celebrate up to 4 to 6 weeks worth of show, because they just keep opening and opening and getting fuller and fuller and more beautiful as the season moves on. So clean out those planters. You know, get rid of all those spent annuals. If you still got things like Ipomea vine, which I still do, or any of your geraniums that are still giving a good show, leave them in and just add a few new things to it, like some kales, some even a fall grass is lovely, and of course pansies, and then the mums, and that'll give you an instant refreshed look in all of your planters. So we're going to take a quick break. Like I said, I've got a lot to talk about because there's a lot of things to do in the fall. But we're going to get right down to the nitty-gritty, literally, and talk a little bit about composting and how to protect your plants in the winter right after the break. See you in a sec.
You are listening to Serendipity with Shelley Levis on NaturesChannel.fm, airing live every Wednesday at 7 p.m. Eastern Time. Find archives and more at Serendipity.com.
Organic, loose leaf, and simply delectable. Prasanna Tea Company strives to help people find balance, connect, and live in wellness. We source the finest tea leaves from pristine farms around the world and blend them with some of nature's purest gifts, creating unique infusions that are healthfully life-enhancing, blissfully aromatic, and positively delicious. Find us at PrasannaTea.com. Prasanna Tea. It's tea the way it should be. Start your week off in a beautiful way. Come to Nature Sanctuary Sunday Service for a powerful and beautiful eco-spiritual celebration where we honor and support ourselves through the reflection of nature. Join us every Sunday at 9 a.m. Eastern Time here at natureschannel.fm. Visit thechurchofnature.org to find out more about Nature Sanctuary Sunday Service and the Church of Nature.
Pets share our day-to-day struggles, adventures, and special moments, and they love us unconditionally. For all these reasons and so many more, host Peggy Hoyt shares her extensive knowledge in estate planning to help you ensure a healthy and safe future for your pet. Tune in to All My Children Wear Fur Coats every Monday at 3 p.m. Eastern Time on naturechannel.fm.
You are listening to naturechannel.fm, live talk radio that helps connect you more deeply with nature. naturechannel.fm, it's where we grow. Join the Horse's Heart and Soul Herd and Sarah Willerson on naturechannel.fm Wednesdays at 1 p.m. Eastern for horse wisdom straight from the stalls. Horses are the heartbeat of the earth, and they help us attune our own hearts with our souls. They encourage us to remember that we are part of the harmonious flow that is nature. Tune in every Wednesday for horse wisdom shared straight from the stalls.
Nature's Channel is where you grow with amazing talk radio shows. We talk about animals and gardening, natural health and wellness. Listen live and find archives at naturechannel.fm.
You are listening to Serendipity with Shelley Levis on naturechannel.fm, airing live every Wednesday at 7 p.m. Eastern Time. Find archives and more at serendipity.com.
Welcome back, everybody. We're talking about fall tasks and all the things that you got to do to get ready for the new season. And enjoying the fall, get out there and smell the leaves. I absolutely love the smell of fall. It's I don't know, it's tough because I always say whenever I go into a new season, yeah, this is my favorite season. And I'm saying that right now about fall, but wait until the first snowfall when the ground is all white and you can hear your own footprints, and then that day will be my favorite season. At least for a week or two when I start to complain about, well, it's too cold, I can't wait for spring. Oh, us horticulturist types, we're always waiting for the next season. Anyways, I hope you enjoy this so far. We've been chatting about all the different things that you can do in fall to get ready, get your garden put away for winter. Now, some of the little plants that you have in there, now, this is a bit of a debate. You'll hear people say, you should take all the leaves out of your garden, get rid of them because they harbor insects. And then you have other people say, no, you should be leaving them because it's leaf protection for your beneficial insects. And it is a natural, frost blanket, really, a ground cover. And I'm in both camps. I think that it's important to actually use the leaves that you have to protect your plants and most of your perennials, you can use them, and they create kind of a canopy. And especially once it gets frosty, they actually seal like a frozen little lid over top of them, which is not a bad thing. I would just move them well into the late winter when you know that you're kind of past those deep, hard frost stage. Get them out of there and throw them into your compost pile before all the little buggies start to wake up. But I mean, I'm in both camps. Something, however, I will say is that you should remove all the leaves from around your roses, because roses, of course, are just, they're such a magnet for so many diseases, including black spot, and I can go on and on. There are just so many problems when it comes to roses and diseases, and your best, course of action of trying to make it as disease-free as possible is to remove any of those leaves and get them right out of your garden. And these should not be put into any of your compost. If any of the leaves that you pull off the roses, if they are yellowed and have the little famous black spots on them, do not compost that. That goes directly into the garbage and out of here, because that just creates a problem for you if you're going to use your compost. And things like all of your veggies that are finished out, or any of your vines that are finished, all that can go into your veggie or into your compost. And I'm going to talk a little moment about compost. Now, there's some pretty graphical, pictures that you can get on Pinterest that really make it complicated. It's really not complicated. Compost is not complicated. Mother Nature has been doing it all on her own without any help from us forever. Like she's a composting machine. She composts old trees and logs and the leaf debris and the forest litter, and those break down and they become the nutrients for the plants and the giants of the forest. She's been doing it all on her own forever. And for people to get really hung up on the do's and the don'ts and the rights and the wrongs of the perfect compost pile, I think that's a little bit over overstated and a little bit over the top. And I think that, as again, as horticulturists, we have a tendency to make things way more complicated when we're explaining it than it really is, because the truth is that we are only half of the magic that happens. The rest is actually Mother Nature. Actually, maybe not even half. I mean, we put it in the ground, we add water, and then we take full responsibility for the beauty of that plant. Oh, boy, but it's true. You know, what it boils down to with compost is really simple. You need layers of brown and layers of green matter. That is basically it. And you just do it like layers, like a lasagna. Now, for instance, green is like all of your grass clippings, for instance, or any of your green vines and stuff like that. Anything that's still very like green in color is a green layer. Now, I've had a ton of grass clippings from this yard. And what I do is I spread it out, and then I'll throw some, you know, brown matter on top. And like the brown matter is going to be like your dried leaves, and that will go on to the next layer. And don't be afraid. Now, twigs and stuff like that don't really belong in your compost pile because they're not going to break down. They're a lot of them are pretty thick and they'll never break down. But I personally like to put in a few to help with the layering. And I just pull those out when it's time to do the compost pile and use the compost. And the reason why I do that is it allows for pockets of air and helps with drainage. And I naturally just kind of throw them in a crisscross fashion, and then I throw on my next layer, which would be a little bit of grass clippings, some more leaves. And then I actually use some of my other compost, because I have two piles going, one that's cooking and one that's pretty much almost ready. And what I do is I'll grab a little bit of the compost that's kind of ready and throw that on top of my other layering as I go. So there's a little bit of soil in between my brown and green layers. That's it. That's all I do. Now, I do not put any meat byproducts in there. Don't put any chicken bones. None of that goes in there. Don't do that. That's what creates the smell and gets the all the little rodents and stuff like that. When people say, oh, it just gets mice and stuff like that. Well, not necessarily. They're not really interested in carrot clippings and stuff like that. They really aren't. I don't really have any problems with mice. I never walked up to my pile and seen mice running everywhere. I've never seen a single mouse in there, to be honest with you. I've had garter snakes hanging out there in the summer because they love the heat, but I don't have any problems with rodents. Oh, maybe that's why I don't have any problems with rodents. A light bulb just came on. It's the garter snakes. Thanks, guys. We're all friends of the garden. So composting is not complicated. It's very easy to do. And don't let anybody tell you any differently. You just got to do it. It's all about layering and making sure that you're not adding too much of one thing over another. And pretty much anything green, it goes into the compost, like in peelings, carrots. Orange peels, people are like, well, that'll bring up the acidity, and it's that's baloney. You're not going to use up that many of those. How many orange peels could you possibly put in there that would really upset the pH? I'm not too worried about that. I throw them in there, and it's usually just fine. And when I test my compost in the fall, it's perfectly fine. Now, I do compost several times throughout the year. I constantly do turn it. I get that pile built all the way up to one side, use up the compost that I have, and then once I have kind of a hole there, I start now flipping it, you know, creating a new layer, and then taking all that top layer from my other compost and flipping it back. So it's kind of like, you know, like a slinky. That's the way I have to say it. You know how you got the slinky that kind of, if you put it in two hands, one to the side and then over to the other side, that's basically how I'm building my layers from side to side, using and revealing the good compost on one side as I'm using undone compost to build my layers on the other, if that makes sense. I actually have a post on my website. You can look up compost. And that should, Compost 101, I think I have it under, and that kind of gives you the breakdown of how easy the system is to create. Yeah, but that's how I use twigs. Now, the thing that you should avoid throwing into your compost pile is anything that's really diseased. You don't want to throw diseased plants in there, and you definitely don't want to throw any weeds. So I have basically, when I'm gardening or doing any weeding, I have two buckets with me. I actually have a tarp for all of the stuff that can go into the compost pile. And it's like I'm pruning, you know, deadheading flowers and stuff like that. That can all go into the compost pile. But I have a bucket that for the weeds that goes into the compost that the city takes away. And that stuff gets regenerated into biofuel. So that never comes into my compost because I don't want to reintroduce it back into my garden later on. Well, the next thing, talking about twigs being used in your compost pile, if you have smaller twigs and stuff like that, when you're doing your pruning, which is this time of year, you're going to be doing your fall pruning, there's really a rule of thumb when it comes to that. It's called the 3 D's. Dead, diseased, damaged. That's what you're basically going to be removing from your plants, is the dead, the diseased, and the damaged. Right away, you can usually figure that out. You know, you can see what's dead. It's nothing's growing on it. There's no leaves. It breaks really easily. It's brittle. There's no green in the inside of the stem. That's a dead branch. Get rid of it. And a disease, obviously, you'll be able to recognize that through the modeling of the leaves, etc. Now, with damaged, anything like it's a broken twig that's kind of fallen over, clean it up. Like, especially we just had this huge windstorm that ripped through this valley, and there was so much breakage in the plants and trees. It's not even funny. We really had a real humdinger a couple of weeks ago, and the damage was astounding. And so right now, when you're out there doing your pruning, if you see that they've been cracked or broken, try to get your secateurs or your pruners out and give it a nice, good, clean cut so that it can heal faster rather than having a dirty scrape, really. You know how it is. A cut on your hand was going to heal a lot faster than, a long scrape on your arm because it just gets infected and stuff like that. And it's the same with trees and on their cambium. So trying to give it a nice clean cut is much better, and it can scar over a lot quicker. The other thing I will say is a lot of people say, well, after I do a big pruning cut, shouldn't I stick tar on there? And this is debatable, because there's going to be an old school thought of people out there to say, absolutely, you gotta put a Band-Aid on it. Well, a Band-Aid is only really good on your fresh cut for the day that maybe you're still bleeding. But we all know that you got to give it some air. So you take the Band-Aid off so that it can actually, harden up and start to heal. And that's the same with plants. In fact, if you go and cut something, and then you go and stick that tar on there, you might actually seal disease in. And I know from my practices and what I've been taught by my professors in horticulture, this is a horrible practice that the trees have gone through many, 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 many lifetimes of having limbs broken from winds or damage or from other falling trees. And they have a backup system. They do know how to seal off that wound and heal themselves. So putting on tar or any of that gooky, mucky stuff that you think is going to help is actually old school thinking, and myself, I don't recommend it. Now, your large grasses, those really big ones, like I have a miscanthus that's probably about 6 feet, almost 7 feet tall. He's gotten really big. He doesn't even have his plumes on yet. Once he's finished, I'm just looking out the window, I can see that he's got a couple of plumes on it now. He's going to probably be up to 7 feet. I don't cut the big miscanthus in any of my large grasses back at this time of year at all. I leave them until probably January. That's when they've really been beaten up and the winds and the snows and everything has really taken its toll. And that's when I go out there and I will cut them back at that time. But some of my smaller grasses that are more warm season, that are finished for the season, I'll cut them into bunny tails at this time of year. Like I've got an oats grass out there that needs to be cut back at this time. But I wouldn't cut them back too early. Just leave them alone. And this way that you know that the roots themselves are going to be protected from its crown. And then when you do cut it back, make sure you do it in late winter, but not too early spring. If you go too far, they'll already start trying to push up new blades, and you're going to have a problem, and you'll end up cutting them off while you're trying to remove all the dead stuff. So, just remember to have all your grasses cut back by the late winter, which is basically February for zone 7, for my zone. And now, boy, I have had so much to talk about today. I'm trying to fit it all in. I'm going to talk a little bit here about harvesting when we get back, from the break here, just some of your winter hardy vegetables that you're pulling out of the ground that you can use for storing and enjoying at Thanksgiving and Christmas and all that jazz. We'll chat a little bit about that right after this break. See you in a sec.
You are listening to Sewindipity with Shelley Levis on NaturesChannel.fm, airing live every Wednesday at 7 p.m. Eastern Time. Find archives and more at sewindipity.com.
organic, loose leaf, and simply delectable. Prasanna Tea Company strives to help people find balance, connect, and live in wellness. We source the finest tea leaves from pristine farms around the world and blend them with some of nature's purest gifts, creating unique infusions that are healthfully life-enhancing, blissfully aromatic, and positively delicious. Find us at PrasannaTea.com. Prasanna Tea. It's tea the way it should be. Start your week off in a beautiful way. Come to Nature Sanctuary Sunday Service for a powerful and beautiful eco-spiritual celebration where we honor and support ourselves through the reflection of nature. Join us every Sunday at 9 a.m. Eastern Time here at natureschannel.fm. Visit thechurchofnature.org to find out more about Nature Sanctuary Sunday Service and the Church of Nature.
Pets share our day-to-day struggles, adventures, and special moments, and they love us unconditionally. For all these reasons and so many more, host Peggy Hoyt shares her extensive knowledge in estate planning to help you ensure a healthy and safe future for your pet. Tune in to All My Children Wear Fur Coats every Monday at 3 p.m. Eastern Time on natureschannel.fm.
You are listening to natureschannel.fm, live talk radio that helps connect you more deeply with nature. Natureschannel.fm, it's where we grow.
Join the Horses, Heart, and Soul Herd and Sarah Willerson on natureschannel.fm Wednesdays at 1 p.m. Eastern for horse wisdom straight from the stall. Horses are the heartbeat of the earth, and they help us attune our own hearts with our souls. They encourage us to remember that we are part of the harmonious flow that is nature. Tune in every Wednesday for horse wisdom shared straight from the stalls.
Nature's Channel is where you grow with amazing talk radio shows. We talk about animals and gardening, natural health and wellness. Listen live at Find Archives at natureschannel.fm.
You are listening to Serendipity with Shelley Levis on natureschannel.fm, airing live every Wednesday at 7 p.m. Eastern Time. Find archives and more at serendipity.com.
Welcome back, everybody. We are talking about fall tasks, and boy, I had a lot to say. There's actually, you know, many things. Each category has a subcategory. You know, I get into talking about pruning, and then, you know, I got to explain a little bit more, and yada, yada. So, you know, let's take a look at harvesting. So try to get this in because I only got so many minutes left. Now, it's harvesting mostly your winter veg. Like I'm talking about squashes, potatoes, onions, and stuff like that. Now, with your squash and your pumpkins, and what you're going to wait to do is wait until they ripen on the vine as much as possible if you can. You know, let them completely wither back. Like the vines will just shrink and shrivel into like nothingness. You know, then it's time to harvest them. They've basically leached every last little bit of nutrients that they could from that vine, and they are now ready. Now, what you need to do for your winter squashes for storage is you need to really put them in a well-ventilated area that's fairly warm for about 2 weeks so that the rind gets nice and thick. And this will allow it to be able to then be cooled and stored in a cool storage with a moderate humidity. Keep it not too low because then it'll shrink, you know, it'll start to shrivel up. And this is the same with all the things I'm talking about. Moderate humidity is the key. Anything that's too high, you're going to get all sorts of, you know, molds and rot happening. So you got to find that happy medium there. So make sure it's in a moderate humidity and cool storage. Potatoes, you should be able to be pulling up your potatoes right about now. Basically, all of your potato plants the stems will just start to look and really withered and start to die back. That's when it's time to really pull up those potatoes. And when you do bring them up, you're going to have to cure them as well so that because you'll find when you start to grab up those potatoes, the skins really fall off really easily or they're damaged really easily. And the reason for that is that they haven't had a chance to be cured. Now, a couple of points with potatoes. you're going to stab a few, but use a garden fork as best as you can and start working furthest away from your mound or your pile, and then working towards it so that you don't start stabbing them and damaging your potatoes. And once you bring them up, just brush them off lightly. Like, don't try to remove all the soil. Just kind of get the clods off. Leave, you know, don't try to wash them. You just want to just kind of brush them off with your hands. Actually, I just kind of run through my hands. And then I place them in a cool, dark place without any sunshine for about 2 weeks, and just allow them to get lots of good air before you go and store them in something that's maybe a basket or a box that maybe is covered with a loose cotton cloth so that it gets a lot of airflow. Now, onions, what you're going to wait to do is for your onions, you've got to let the necks completely fall over. They've got to fall into the ground. That's the time that says, okay, they're done growing. It's time to pull them out. And as you're just, again, using a garden fork to loosen them, you don't try to grab them by their necks. Just, use a garden fork and go along the whole row and just get underneath it, pop them up. And, again, don't try to wash all of that soil off. Just kind of use your hands to kind of rub it off and then put them, again, into a well-vented area for a week or two. Once they've cured, then you can cut the necks off about 2 inches above, and then you can store those also in boxes or mesh bags in a cool, moderate, humid environment. Carrots, now, when they're actually will go, depending on your environment, like I've harvested carrots all the way up to the very first harvest, up till Christmas, actually, because we didn't really get any hard frost until then. But you really want to get them before the first hard frost. They've got lots of good sugars in them. When you get zapped like that, sometimes the quality can become quite poor or they get a little mushy. So you get them on the ground if you can before the first hard frost. And again, I would just, those are something a little bit different. I would clean those to get most of the dirt off. Just give them a quick wash and let them dry completely before you store them into bags in your refrigerator. Now, there's different ways you can freeze and pickling. I'm not going to get into any of the canning today about those, but I will say that if you're just doing for cold storage in your fridge, that's how you would do it, is just to get them nice and clean and dry before you wrap them up in plastic bags for the refrigerator drawer. Garlic, now, this time of year, you'll be harvesting your garlic that you planted in spring or even last fall. The cloves have now grown into bulbs, and use a fork when you're getting, again, it's the same idea with any of your root vegetables. Try to start your fork back a little bit further from where you think the plant is, because you're going to be much happier that you didn't go too close in, because you'll just damage so many, and you're going to get it. You're going to damage them. That's the way you'll always get that potato, at least one or two that you're going to hit that you tried not to, and you'll always miss a potato, which will be there next year. So let them again vent in a nice cool area for 2 weeks, and then once they are quite dry, you could just remove the dirty wrappers on those, just the ones that are really got a lot of soil on there, because you'll see that the next layer has papered up, and then you can throw those into boxes or mesh bags. So save your onion bags, when you don't have onions and you're still having to buy the onion bags from the store. Save those and use them again for these types of things. So basically, I think I've covered everything here. Of course, there's all the frost protection for your hoses and drips and your rain barrels. Empty them out, turn them upside down, because you don't want them to get full of water and freeze solid in the winter. So that is all I have to say. Boy, I had a lot to say, and I think I talked a million miles a minute, but I got it all in. And I hope you guys have a great week, and I will be back same time next week. And for all the little tips I talked about, visit my website at www.sowindipity.com. Have a great week, guys, and we'll talk to you soon. Bye-bye.
Thank you for listening to Sowindipity on naturestchannel.fm. Visit sowindipity.com and join our free email list for updates on shows, links to fun DIY projects, and helpful tips to help your garden grow. See you next week at 7 p.m. Eastern Time. And remember, gardening is easy. Gardening is fun.